Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 181 of the Distraction Pieces podcast. It's an exciting one. I'm joined this week by Alex Horn, the assistant of the Taskmaster, but also the creator of the Taskmaster TV show, which is one of my favourite TV shows. If you follow me on social media, you will have seen me rave about it a lot. And I got this opportunity come up last minute to go to the Taskmaster house and chat with Alex in the Taskmaster caravan. So it's hugely exciting. Before I get into the sponsor bit that I always do in the intros, I think it's worth mentioning that I would easily win Taskmaster and be the greatest guests, completing all the tasks cleverly, instinctively, and wonderfully. I would also correct Greg Davies every week on how to say task, because it's task, it's not task. So I want you all to tweet Alex Horn, tweet Dave, tweet Taskmaster, all of these. Just hassle them, saying that they need to get Scroobius Pip on a future series. So in fact, I'll give you a minute before we go into the podcast now. If you want to just pop your phone out, open click that's it, open Twitter, then do at Dave, I think it will come up, at Dave Channel maybe, yep, and then at Taskmaster, that will come up. I'm not sure what the exact tag is. At Alex Holt, again a similar, at Greg Davies, just tag all of them and say that's it. No, tag that's it, the verified one, the blue tick, yep. And just basically demand that the next guest or a future series involves at Scroobius Pipio. Have you done that? Have you? Yep. There we go. Send the tweet. That's, yep. Okay. Perfect. And then I'll come on, I'll like that, and I'll say, yeah, that's a great idea. You just came up with that independently, but I agree with your independent thought, and it's great to see such public demand for me to come on. I promise if I do go on, I won't stutter over every task, because that would obviously extend the length of the program extensively. This week's podcast is brought to you, as ever, by SpeechDevelopmentRecords.com. Christmas is coming. I've got a signed section at Speech Development Records, so you could buy a signed copy of my Distraction Pieces podcast book, or my Poetry in Emotion book, or my Edinburgh Fringe DVD. We talk about Edinburgh Fringe in this episode, and I did a show up there that got all 4 or 5 star reviews. It didn't get a single review that was less than 4 or 5 stars. So that's pretty decent. It sold out every night. I did 19 shows and they sold out. So I decided to film it, and we did a DVD on which I'm interviewed as an extra by Tim Key. And I do a little podcast with Polar Bear, Kate Tempest and Moose Rock Wonga, a filmed one. So yeah, there's loads of interesting stuff on there, the 2 DVD set. And you can buy it signed for just 15 of your English pounds. So that's a good Christmas present, right? I think we're still just about in range of ordering in time for Christmas, I think. Either way, it'd be a nice New Year's present as well. But I've got tons of good stuff at SpeechDevelopmentRecords.com. We've got bobble hats, we've got scarves, we've got all sorts of winter goodies. So grab them while you can and support the podcast that comes to you for free every week. Let's get into the podcast. As we'll mention, Taskmaster Champion of Champions starts tonight on Dave. If you listen to this on Wednesday, December 13th, which you should be, it starts tonight on Dave. And as I've said, it's my favourite. It's my favourite TV show. I absolutely adore it. So yeah, let the podcast begin. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. I put my phone on airplane mode,
which
is handy as we're under a flight path. So it's kind of appropriate, isn't it?
What does that one do? Or is that spare?
That's my backup, because I once recorded one with the people who work at Ben and Jerry's a UK, which was hugely exciting because I really enjoy ice cream.
Okay.
And I got to my hotel room that night and it hadn't recorded at all.
Oh, so sad.
So now I record a backup. But in the typical podcast way, I've started recording all casual and jumping into it. And then in the more typical podcast way, I've addressed that. So it's just the most podcasty podcast ever. I'm joined by Alex Horn. How are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you, Scroobius.
Pip. It's lovely to have you.
Thank you. No, I'm very good. It's very nice to be asked. I was very pleased.
Yeah.
And then that was the end of the emotions.
Exactly. I mean, that's good emotions. That's succinct and to the point. It wasn't confusing for you. You knew the emotion. You recognised it and
I don't have,
continued on.
I don't know what you're going to be asking me later on, but just to say, I don't have many emotions.
Right, okay.
I discovered recently, I've never... And this won't sound great. I've never been properly sad.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a good thing, though, right?
It is, but it did make me feel a little bit shallow.
Have you ever been... Do you feel you've ever been properly happy? That's
yes.
the more important one, yeah?
Most days.
Oh, that's good, then.
Yeah.
So, but it's... Do you feel that lack of emotion is a lack of awareness of all the things that are wrong in your life?
I think what it is, it's a lack of empathy. I think,
right.
quite luckily, I've not had many... near deaths,
yeah,
close to me,
yeah,
some pets,
yeah, that all counts.
Some grandparents, but at the right time,
yeah, we're meant from to my die point of view,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And then other people's sadness doesn't seem to make me sad. That's what I'm worried about.
I know. I think it's. I don't think it's something you should worry about. And I think genuinely,
I mean, I don't get that worried. I'm always happy.
Although we're being light-hearted about it, I think it's genuinely good for people to hear that because we're in a world now where we have to share and express our sadness at every event. Mm. Like if we don't do a social media post that Prince has died or someone else, and how and Prince is my favourite artist ever, but I wasn't that sad.
Okay,
when he died.
That makes me feel
kind of. I've still got his albums. I enjoyed it.
They don't take them away when someone dies.
My relationship with Prince hasn't changed at all since he died. We've completely kept the exact same relationship.
I guess if anything, it's levelled out.
Yeah.
You know where you are with Prince now.
Yeah, yeah. We're now more evens. So yeah, it's a nice balance of emotions, I guess. But again, I think people are too hung up on, I'm really heartbroken by this or that. And really, it's just a tweet. It's not really affected your day. Like, once you've sent that tweet, you normally... getting on with your life, so it's good to
change the balance.
A lack of that emotion.
Well, anyway, there we are. Is that it?
That's it. Thank you for coming. I'm glad you've made time because we're on the lunch break in the Taskmaster caravan as you're filming Taskmaster Champion of Champions.
Oh, we're actually. Oh, yes, that is right.
Oh, are you on to future?
Well, we are, but we're not asked to tell anyone that.
Okay, that's excellent. I'll be keeping an eye out to see if I can spot any spoilers peering out windows.
I think they've not officially announced it, so I think officially I'm not allowed to announce it. So we're definitely filming Taskmaster of some sort.
Excellent. Yeah. So that's great, because I was saying to you before we started, and I sometimes get told off on the podcast, because people say, oh, all you do is, you're always really nice to all your guests. And what people don't realise is it's up to me who the guests are. So I only have people I want to talk to. And Taskmaster, in my opinion, it's the most consistent TV show of the last decade, I think. Like, genuinely, every episode, because of the format and because of the variation of contestants, it's just consistently hilarious and entertaining. So,
well, that's very nice to hear. I don't mind you being nice to your guests.
No, it's good from the guests' side of the table.
I mean, I would say that probably, and it's very nice of you to say that, but I think if there is consistency, it's probably because of our guests, and we have the same policy that we only have people on that we want as well.
Yeah.
So we invite people who we think are really funny and nice.
Yeah.
And so they tend to be funny and nice.
And it's great as well, because the first season had two of my favourite people on.
Can I guess?
Go on.
Tim and Romesh.
Yes, exactly right. Okay. Exactly. They're just absolutely wonderful. But each season, I mean... it was last season, I think, that Bob Mortimer was on. Bob Mortimer's just
spending
the best
time with him
in
this
world,
in this
right.
caravan, sitting up. Imagine if I was Bob Mortimer.
Yeah,
but this is quite fun. But imagine Mortimer,
with
his little face. It's moments like that when you come up with a stupid idea, and then a couple of years later, you think, you know, I can say, right, I want these people to dig a hole, biggest hole wins, and then Bob Mortimer does it.
Yeah,
it's pretty. It is kind of just relying on better comics to make your ideas happen.
It's absolutely amazing, but again, it's the format. And unless I rewind then, because this was originally a fringe show.
Yeah, it was not. It wasn't even that. It was a one-off. So I was doing a show at the Fringe,
yeah.
And quite often, I think for me, the way to do the Fringe is to have a laugh and experiment,
yeah,
and use it because you're up there and all your mates are up there and there's an audience there. So if you just go up and do one show, it's potentially a waste of a month.
Yeah.
So I always take up a show and then do another couple of bits and bobs. Great. And that this was just an excuse to get 20 comedians together for one night.
Yeah.
And actually, I'd set them a task every month for a year. And so we had one night where I told them what all the others had done, and there was a small audience, yeah. And that was it. And that was meant to be that. That was meant to be the end of it, really. It was just a laugh.
Oh, that's amazing. And then that format translates.
Yeah, we did it again the next year with 10 comedians because there were too many people.
Yeah.
And that time, someone said, oh, this should be it could be a telly show. Yeah. And then 2 years after that. But it was never a telly idea. Maybe that's why it's slightly different from other things, because it's not come from a place of desperation to get on telly.
Yeah, it was just an idea. And I think Dave are good at trying out those ideas. With Go 8-Bit, I think, yeah, is great. And with Dave... I'm sure it was on... No, it might have been on the BBC that Dara Brin did.
The maths
one. The maths one.
Yeah, again, that was Dave. That was
and
Dave.
And just things like that that feel like they're things that, again, as you said, Edinburgh is perfect for, I'm going to be up there with loads of my mates, I'm going to have some spare evenings,
yeah,
let's do a show where, for example, we all wrestle, or the freestyle battles and stuff like that. All stuff that are some of the best shows, but it's purely born of boredom. It's born of, I'm doing the same show every night for a whole month.
Yeah.
On my night off, I want to do, let's do a freestyle battle or this or that.
Exactly. Well, Tim and I did a show before, Tim Key and I,
yeah,
years ago, up there with Mark Watson, called We Need Answers, which is a very low-key or lo-fi quiz show where we got all the questions from... Do you remember these text question answer services? You could text 63336,
yeah,
any question, and they'll answer it.
Yeah.
And we teamed up with them, and they gave us all their questions and answers. So
amazing.
It's people saying, it was quite a lot of how big's my dick, that,
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah.
But put that on a quiz,
yeah,
and it works. So the, yeah, two comics have to say what the
say
what
how
answer
big their dick is.
Yeah. Well, they had to say what answer the text answering service gave.
Right. So what they'd predict.
Yeah. They would say, so well, the average male penis is, and so on. So it becomes a sort of formalised version.
Yeah.
And that got picked up by BBC Four. That was on for one series, and then they dropped it from quite a height.
Yeah. Was there ever any annoyance, or is there any drive from the fact that Tim Key is such an Edinburgh darling, and that he's always winning awards, always, yeah, having these? Everyone, he'll turn up and do absolutely anything. He'll have a mattress in the middle of the room and do a whole thing around it, and everyone will say, "What a work of art!"
Yeah, he's a nightmare.
Whereas it feels like he's just making it up on the spot.
And well, what he does, he's quite clever. So he is my sort of, I'm not sure about friend, but you know, I've known him for a long time. He's my son's godfather.
A prolonged associate.
Yeah, I keep him close, you know. But what was I going to say? He's quite clever in lots of ways, but what is his current tactic is to do work-in-progress shows up in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
But plan them for years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they're much better than anyone else's shows.
Yeah.
But he keeps the cool... Oh, no, he's brilliant.
You've got the pressure off,
yeah,
of it being a work in progress. It's like, wow.
Well, to be honest, when the first series of this, Frank Skinner agreed to do it, and that meant... That was great, because it meant other people would sign up. But for, yeah, me, having Tim do it just meant that it was a different sort of show to a normal panel show, because you,
yeah,
wouldn't get him on the week.
Yeah,
it.
Completely.
So he does lend a sense of not just coolness, but just... I think people trust that he's avant-garde, but in a... Quite know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no,
he's different.
100%. It instantly had that different feel. And again, I think it's the as stupid as it sounds, but the consistency of you have the same guests for a whole season. I know that sounds stupid, but it made it stand out from the panel shows that have a lot of the same people on rotation, or they will have filmed 2 episodes of 8 out of 10 Cats in the same night that go out in separate months, and they've changed a shirt or things like that.
Yeah.
It's just a bit. This like, no, we're having the same people. Like, you're gonna get to see a Ramesh do his same angry face every week,
yeah,
in reaction to something.
That was the hardest bit to get across the line TV wise.
Really,
people thought, well, that's not how it works. You don't want to. People won't tune in again to see those five,
yeah,
people.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, it's a sitcom in that respect,
or
more like EastEnders probably.
And it's what lures you in, because you are waiting. You're invested after the first one. You've seen a one person win, and you want to know who wins.
Although I think the first episode of a new series, people go, "Ah, no, this lot aren't for me."
Right.
And then by the second one, hopefully they realise that they like someone or they don't like someone, and,
yeah,
they tune in again. But I'm always nervous the first episode of a new series, how people are going to react.
Yeah.
You know, if they go, "Well, no, this that lot aren't good because they are stuck with them.
Yeah, yeah.
But then five different brands, if any people, you know, that's always what I've been surprised by, is that everyone's so different.
Yeah.
You know, if me and you were asked to do the same thing, we would do it in very different ways, even though we look very similar and have been mistaken for each other.
Yeah, yeah, it's happened. But that, again, that's what's great about it is most series, there'll be one or two people that you're not as familiar with as a viewer, and they're the ones that end up becoming the favourites, it seems. Paul Chowdhury comes to mind, and Nish's constant failures on the last season is what makes them the most endearing.
Endearing is a good word. I think if I was on it, I think being the triumphant loser is the best part to play, because any victory you do get after that, you know, once you're established as being bad at it,
yeah,
but trying hard,
yeah,
then you're everyone's favourite.
Yeah, exactly. So was it always the plan to do a Champion of Champion?
I think quite early, once we knew we'd got to do the third series, I think we were thinking, oh, I hope we get to do five, so we have five winners. I mean, it's based heavily on Gladiators,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And when they did the International Gladiators,
yeah,
that was a big moment for me.
Yeah.
And you know what? There's probably also some elements of Big Brother in there. So yeah. I used to work on Big Brother. I was a logger.
Right.
2000. I don't know. It was the third series, so it was Jade Goody and
oh wow,
PJ.
Yeah.
And Spencer. I could probably name most of them. Kate Lawler.
Yep. Kate Lawler was my aunt's assistant just before she left to go and do Big Brother.
Okay. So, can I guess your aunt's name?
Yes.
Janet.
Nope.
June.
Nope.
It's definitely beginning with a Karen.
Nope.
I'm getting Lisa.
No.
Do you want to give me a clue? Give me the last.
It begins
letter.
With an A.
Oh, not Anita.
No.
Anna.
I've gone for that because it's an unusual A name. Go on, keep going.
Not Eileen.
No.
But with an A. Ashling.
No.
Alison.
No.
Not just Auntie.
Auntie. No, it's Antoinette.
Oh, we could have been here for a long
exactly,
time.
Exactly, it's an unusual. That's why I felt confident giving you the first letter.
Your eyes lit up when I said, can I guess her name?
Yeah, I was like, good luck, mate. Yeah.
Lawler was Antoinette's
assistant.
Yeah.
And then she did great on Big Brother. So you were there to log, Pete?
You had to sit and watch it. There was two of us at a time. You could only do 2-hour shifts and 1 hour off. They gave us a Barocca as soon as we arrived.
Amazing.
And so you sit and watch it, and you just get addicted to it, because I think if you watch anything, you get addicted.
Yeah.
If you watch Goldfish, you'll want to tune in next
completely,
week.
Completely, completely.
But there were lots of good elements to that, especially when it started, when it was just a social experiment rather than a way to get famous. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really good, and some of their games were really good. And then they did have International Big Brother, I think, where people from different countries, and I was interested in that.
Yeah.
I do like, this show is meant to be just about people doing things.
And again, I completely agree. I think Big Brother gets a bad rap. Not that it's a show that I particularly watch or enjoy, but as a concept, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Because I remember years ago, I had an inquiry to ask if I'd be interested in doing a Celebrity Big Brother. And I said no, because again, it is now something that you do for fame or whatever else. But it appealed to me as an experiment, because you watch it and you go, why are they arguing over someone's eating the chicken? This is ridiculous. I could solve that argument in a second. But if you've ever lived with anyone, you know that someone putting the milk in the wrong place becomes this infuriating thing. So whilst you can sit at distance and say, I'd solve that problem, in reality, you might not. You might break and crumble.
I sort of think if it wasn't filmed, I would be on it like a rat.
Yeah, yeah.
But then again, if it wasn't filmed, you'd behave differently, because we had to go and test some of the games back in the day when I was a logger. We were allowed in, and we were in the camera runs and stuff. It was really exciting in there, because it was, you know, it was headline news the next day, whatever happened in the house. But as soon as you know that other people are watching you in this control centre, you behave so weirdly.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to look competitive, but you don't want to lose. It sort of heightens everything about you.
It becomes completely unnatural, because it's now you portraying a character rather than you in a genuine situation.
Yeah, and you want everyone to like you and be impressed. Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah. Mm. So that influenced the idea of Taskmaster.
I think so,
in
hopefully
some ways.
Subliminally, rather than too much me going, I want to copy that. But I definitely, when I look back, I think, there's elements to it.
It's something that left our TV for a long while, from like your Crystal Maze and your Challenge Annika and all these different...
Krypton Factor?
Yeah, Krypton Factor and Generation Game type things where there was these tasks each time. It kind of, it went away, and it's a lovely thing to come back.
I think people do like the fact that you're getting your hands dirty and you're actually doing stuff. Like at the moment, someone's outside digging a hole for something we've asked them to do.
Fantastic.
And I think it's nice when you see comedians doing that rather than sitting behind a desk, sometimes scoffing at people or you know, being a bit cynical.
Yeah.
But seeing them actually do stuff against the clock and stuff that you could do at home. Yeah, and I think people do appreciate that.
And watching the way the brain works, because there will be stuff that is such a simple misunderstanding or such a simple misinterpretation of how to do something that you'll show everyone do it their way, and then the last person you'll show, and it'll be the most ludicrous, illogical. Yet in their mind at the time, this is the best way to get this from here to here.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a way that might be the opposite of Big Brother, that they're actually feeling quite a safe environment here. So it's just me.
Yeah.
A small crew. There's two cameras and sound, and that's it. So they try, and we're here for a long time. They each come for maybe 6-7 days.
Yeah.
And do a load of tasks. So they feel very confident and safe. So they're not ever self-conscious. They're just being themselves.
Yeah.
Which is great, because they really let their guard down. And they're idiots. They really, you know.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's some of the most ludicrous misunderstandings. On the It's the ones I thoroughly enjoy is when they've made a mistake early that clearly disqualifies them, and you allow them to keep going for an hour or so, and then the heartbreak as they're watching it going, oh, I messed that up, didn't I?
Yeah, and it can be heartbreak. Because they've invested so much of their little lives.
Yeah.
I really like all of them, and they're all very... You know, they are all very bright. But I like it when bright people cock up.
Yeah, it's beautiful. A pizza has arrived.
Yeah, I'm going to nibble it. Are you sure?
Yeah, that's absolutely
even the
fine.
Smell of it makes me feel like I'm being slightly antisocial.
No, it smells delicious. I've already eaten, but a Franco Manca is a known fantastic pizza place. I've never eaten there. I went to once and they couldn't fit me in.
Oh.
They were too busy.
Oh, right.
Not height.
Yeah, I was going to say the doors...
Tiny doors.
Yeah, that's a misunderstanding. Tiny doors.
So, one thing I wanted to inquire about, if it's going to be,
I don't mind an inquiry,
fixed at any point, is anyone looking into teaching Greg how to say task? Because it infuriates me every series.
Because he says task.
He says task. Yeah, I tweet him about it all the time, and he gets quite annoyed. And then a lot of people from the Midlands get involved, but it's Taskmaster, will generally state quite clearly. And
I don't think he's going to change. He doesn't change.
Okay,
he will always be how he is. And there's nothing I can do or you can do about it.
Right.
Yeah. So no, the answer is no.
It's a shame, but
It's a massive shame. I mean, it's a fundamental. It's the name of the show.
Yeah, it is, and he is. It's his title.
Yeah,
it's his own. He doesn't know his own name.
Yeah, he says Greg, right?
Yeah, he gets that. Davies.
Well, he sometimes gets Davies. I think he calls it Davis, but it's Davies. Davies, so he gets his surname wrong and his title. But he's got Greg nailed.
I mean, it's a mess. But yeah, he gets Greg perfectly right. And so does he... Does Greg's role as the Taskmaster... Does he know what's happened in advance, or is he witnessing it all in the studio?
It's pretty natural. It's all pretty real.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the real elements of the show are them doing the tasks against the clock.
Yeah.
They have no idea what's coming.
Yeah.
Greg doesn't know till the day of the studio. I mean, I call him and say, "Oh, it's you're going to enjoy it. It's a lot of fun." But I do all his bidding.
Yeah.
And then he watches it. Sometimes he watches it for the first time in the studio. Sometimes like an hour or two before, so he's got some idea of what to say, but he didn't really need it. And quite often he'll watch it and say, right, I might say this about this person, but he normally won't. He'll normally just it'll be off the cuff, because you don't really know how someone's done until you see them reacting to it as well, and the audience reacting to it.
Yeah,
sometimes they make little films, you know, they might make a trailer for a movie
or and a song. I mean, the song that Bob's addition to the song that was just
about Rosalind
shouting angrily at Rosalind or how awful she was just wonderful.
Yeah. But I will sometimes think, well, that's a brilliant movie until you show it in front of the audience and you realise, oh no, that's an awful movie.
Yeah, that's terrible.
So Greg, it's all pretty, it's natural reactions to what he's seen, and he never scores it until the night. So he does hand out the points. We don't know who's going to win. All that side of it, I think, is quite important. Even though it's ludicrous, but it's important that it's real.
Because if
the contestants think, well, this is all predestined, then I think you lose an element of
exactly.
It.
It's the perfect combination of the obviously prepared and filmed and played out far in advance, and then the reality of that all reacting and happening on the night.
Yeah, but that's quite difficult in TV terms, because it means you can't drop any task. So if you show a task and it doesn't work,
yeah,
it's not funny. We have to still show it, because otherwise the points don't add up.
Yeah.
So this is another leap that the channel have to make and trust us that,
yeah,
you know, we have to show everything we do.
It's a leap, and this is going to sound like a strange leap, but I think, speaking of Bob Mortimer, Vic and Bob made a really important leap years ago in realising that on general comedy quiz panel shows, the points don't matter at all.
Mm.
It's purely the entertainment and the laughing, and that's been adapted into 8 out of 10 Cats and everything else. No one really... It doesn't matter who wins as long as it's funny and there's good answers. And Taskmaster has been the kind of first to leap back in the opposite direction, going,
points
no, the points really matter. It's the most important thing. How dare you?
That's a very good point.
So was that, again, did you... Or was that something you were aware of early on? It's like, we can't just kind of cheat this as such. We've got to allow that to play out.
It was based only on that first initial competition, which was inspired by Tim won the Perrier and I wasn't there, so I was jealous and so wanted to do my own wanted to do my own competition.
Yeah.
So it was just that I knew that I had these 20 comics and they would care who won. So if I started saying you've got 1 million points for that, they're not going to be interested. So yeah, it was just, I think it's based on that the comics had to trust me.
Had to actually care in the investment. And
But having said that, one of the first tasks in that Edinburgh one was find a hedgehog, fastest wins. So I emailed that to all 20.
Mm-hmm.
And within, I'd say 20 seconds, Tim Key had emailed back saying, found one. And so I gave him the full points because I have no reason not to believe him.
Yeah.
So, you know, unless anyone could prove that he hadn't found one, he said he found it and released it. Actually, he said... And this is not going to reflect well on me, but his actual quote was, found it, fucked it, ate it.
Brilliant.
Which is classic Tim King.
Brilliant, yeah.
Not really in my persona to say that sentence about a mammal.
Yep.
So the points do matter, but they are often unfair at the same time.
Yeah.
So he will get the full points for that, but the other comics will feel cheated. But they can also see that there's some logic to it.
Perfect. Mm. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about a champion of champions a little bit more without obviously revealing anything.
Yes.
Purely because I don't want my enjoyment to be ruined. In fact, as this goes out on December 13th, it starts tonight, right?
Yeah,
is that the case?
Work with podcasts, so this is going out, but so some people might have heard it.
This will go out on the 13th, and we get the bulk of our listeners on the day.
Do you?
And the rest kind of as it goes on. But, I mean, all of the Taskmaster ones are on the Dave on Demand, right?
Probably the same as... You know, TV's a bit like podcasts now, that people tend not to...
Yeah.
I'd say the bulk of them watch it on the day.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't, and people were very annoyed that the last... When they announced the winner of the last series...
Yeah.
That they had gone out a couple of hours... Right. Well, on Twitter, Dave announced it, and people were annoyed with that because they were saying, well, the TV's different now, we don't all watch it.
Yeah.
But equally...
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah,
equally. And the thing, one of the things, since it started,
Antoinette, sorry, it's gonna bug me.
It wasn't until I researched the original one at the Fringe, or it might have been the second one at the Fringe. As soon as it started, I was like, when are you gonna have Josie Long on?
Yeah,
she's the most competitive person I know and one of the funniest people I know, and then I saw that she was a winner of the original incarnation. So yeah, do you have a hit list of people that you want to get on that you think each series, let's see if they're about?
Yeah, it's a tricky balance, I'd say. It tends to be that I suggest the people I want,
yeah,
and the channel suggests the people they want, and the production company suggests the people they want, and we meet in the middle.
Perfect.
And there's never anyone on it that I don't want.
Yeah,
there might be people I do want who don't get on it.
Yeah,
and there have to be the right balance of types of people, and not just, you know, the wacky one and the old one, but just if somebody is very gentle, you want someone next to that who's... Oh, you can have two gentle people, but probably not five.
Yeah, I get.
So it is quite a tricky balance. And, I mean, I'm hoping that we can carry on going for a bit so that I can get all the people that I want on it. But it tends to be that I can sneak someone in. I mean, even Tim, the first time... He was sort of my one.
Right, yeah.
And I have to say to people, trust me, he'll be great on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can do that once a series, I suppose.
That's great.
Yeah. But I'd say you're more of a connoisseur of a certain sort of comedy than maybe the people... Yeah. Then
completely.
Different tastes.
Completely, yeah. And that's it. But that's what works about it, is there is that variation. You will have a Bob Mortimer that most people have heard of and is a legend, and then you'll have... Yeah. Whoever else on that one that's going to be the Tim Key stands out as the one that rose there, and Wilkinson and then so
Lolly Adefope in that series, you know, there was up with Mel Gedroych and Mel Fielding, who were big hitters, and Hugh Dennis and Joe Lycett. So yeah, you do get five people who wouldn't normally be on the same show together, which is fun.
And it works nicely. And again, there is a mix, not to keep analysing the guest selection, but there does always seem to be someone from the old guard in Hugh Dennis or Frank Skinner or Bob Mortimer, and that mixes nicely with your lollies and your kind of more new and currently touring in the scene.
It's not massively deliberate, that, but I think you're right, it does help because they're so confident in themselves, even when they're deciding what to do with the task.
Yeah,
they're not worried about, if like Bob's never worried about the points or about being funny because he knows he's going to be funny.
Yeah.
And so he just does them. And he ended up winning quite a few points because he's just a dad.
Yeah.
You know, so he's handy.
And
whereas Nish,
the confidence there as well is exactly right. And Hugh Dennis was one of the best examples of that.
I love Hugh Dennis.
Absolute confidence. And then I think he got a really bad score pretty much every week.
He was unlucky.
The confidence of when recording every task just, well,
yeah,
this is obviously how it's going to work.
And I think he might be. I don't have favourites, but I think he's probably the one I prefer to all the others.
Yeah, yeah.
He looks so... He looks quite vulnerable, Hugh, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think you know him because he's been in all the massive TV shows.
Yeah,
even you know, like Fleabag as well.
Yeah.
But there he was, he was sort of stripped bare.
Yeah.
And you realise he's a really interesting man.
Yeah.
Sort of sensitive and sort of dopey.
Yeah.
Very funny. Very nice.
Amazing.
I carried him in one task for a bit. That'll stay with me. Carrying Hugh Dennis. When I'm watching Mary Whitehouse Experience as a 16-year-old, I didn't think one day I'd be carrying Hugh Dennis.
Hugh Dennis. So how do you enjoy the task side of it? Because I assume that you come up with a lot of the tasks.
Can we use the bulk of again? Because you used that earlier. I enjoyed it when you
said
the bulk
of the task. Yeah.
The bulk of the tasks.
Yeah, but then you're there and engaged and you're the one consistent, I guess, because you're there for everyone's attempts and everyone's
engagement. When we started it, we didn't think I'd have to be here all the time.
Yeah.
But it does put people at ease because I tend to know most of the people on it because we're from the same industry circuit. And I really want to be. I hate occasionally I have to miss it because I miss like one task in the morning because I have to drop the kids to school or something. And I hate it because I want to be there for it. I just want to watch it all because it's so interesting. So the first time someone does a task, it's interesting because I've come up with a task and then someone has to do it. And I think, will they do it the way I think I would do it?
Yeah.
And then the second time you're thinking, that's sort of the make or break of a task. If two people do it differently, you think, right, that's going to be fine, that'll make it into the show. Because there's some that don't make it. Not very many. And by the third, you're thinking, oh, this is who's going to win?
Yeah.
And by the fifth, it fits that jigsaw. You've got the story. You've got someone doing it well, someone badly.
Yeah.
And then that happens again and again and again. So it's just a lovely day.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it. The only trouble is the first time someone does a task, there's a lot of setting up, where the cameras go, what exactly the wording should be, and once you've done it once, you're locked into it. You can't change anything.
Of course.
So the first time round takes a bit longer.
Yeah.
And you're more nervous
to get that nailed down.
Well, even if you say you've got 20 minutes, you might suddenly think, oh no, 10. 10's much better.
10's more.
But once you've done it once, it's done.
So I'm going to talk about other stuff as well as Taskmaster.
With me?
But yeah. With you, I mean, on the way home, I might ring some others. I might ring some people and have a chat. But
I barely talk about anything else, so this would be nice.
Yeah,
I'm going to have another slice, though.
No, have another slice. The Champ of Champs,
sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
It's not pre-sliced, so I'm just tearing it apart. If you want to have a look at that,
I'm never sure on that on takeaway from restaurants.
If
it's a takeaway, you'd slice it, right?
Yeah,
I always think that because I've done I've done a lot of hotel tour eating.
Mm.
And a hotel room, and you've got an unsliced pizza. It's not ideal.
One time on tour, I got a takeaway curry.
Yeah,
and it smelled really bad in the room.
Yeah.
So afterwards, I hung it up, the empty packaging. I hung it from a window outside and shut the window, and so the smell wasn't there. And then I woke up in the morning, and it was all over the roof because a bird had been at it. And I've sort of felt shame ever since.
They're going to have assumed that was some kind of avant-garde rock and roll statement of trash in a room.
I was trying to be kind.
He got his curry and he got a bird to spread it all over the hotel. Do you think that the pizza people knew that it was coming to the Taskmaster house and thought, we'll give them a bit of a challenge?
Oh, I hope so. That makes me feel
better. Eat this pizza without any cutlery. You've got 1 hour of a podcast.
It does cross my mind. So comedians normally, if you meet someone on the street, they'll go, oh, go on, tell us a joke.
Yeah.
And I tend to now have, oh, I've got a task for you.
Right, yeah.
And they tend not to quite be... not exactly right for the show.
Yeah.
They're normally a bit blue. They also do a Taskmaster blue.
do a dirty task yeah. for me. No, yeah. I won't. But anyway, the champ of champs, the lineup is Bob Mortimer, Josh Widdicombe, mm-hmm. Catherine Ryan, Noel Fielding, and Rob Beckett, who I think was a surprise winner, right? I don't think anyone anticipated Rob.
He didn't either. It came down to him or Al Murray and Dave Gorman, who are both... They're all three of them are very intelligent,
yeah.
but I suppose different types of intelligence. Rob is a
street
clever,
smarts on that, yeah. isn't it? Street smarts.
But Rob knows his strengths and he knows his weaknesses, and he managed to play the two of them off against each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my only regret out of the lineup is that Josh Widdicombe, I call him Josh Widdico, MBE,
right,
probably my favourite ever joke, yep. and I forgot that's to wonderful. Do that in the studio.
Unbelievable.
Well, I'm doing it now, though.
Yep, that's on record, yep. so everyone tuning in tonight, just play that bit of audio just yep. beforehand.
It's Josh Widdicko, MBE.
I noted down there, Rob's the lowest scoring winner.
Oh.
Just so you know, just
is that per episode or in total?
In total, and I know there was more episodes in the last two series. Was that? Is
that will be good to know. I mean, weirdly, it went six episodes, then yep. five, then five, then eight, then eight.
Wow, that's a lot more.
Mm. Yeah, so it's a bit harsh on him. But I would say John Richardson was unlucky not to make it to the final. I think he scored on average more points than, for example, Widdicko, MBE.
Yeah,
and John's never let me not know that.
He's someone I would expect to win.
Mm, I think he expects to win, and I expect him to win. There was one task where I changed the scoring
yeah.
before a task in the studio, and we just thought, oh, let's have a high-scoring round. And anyone could have won the points. He yeah. didn't, and Catherine did, and she went on to win. And that rankled. And that's when I realised people do care about the points.
They genuinely care.
And I'd like to apologise to John Richardson.
I mean,
but equally, again,
yeah, fuck him. so it's good to talk to you and hear that you enjoy it so much, because it does feel like something that its success has made it take over your life a lot. Because you were doing fringe shows for a long time yes. before Taskmaster. You were doing a lot. With the horn section, and always great on 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown and stuff
Thank
like that
serious.
With the horn section, and that's, for anyone who doesn't know, it's comedy with a band and with songs and some live improvisation and stuff like that, and
that's about it.
And yeah, how is that? Is there any kind of element that you're like, well, I need a break from tasks, or is it a happy success at the moment?
It's happy at the moment. I mean, I've never been sad, as we know.
Yeah, that's established.
Yeah. I haven't done a solo stand-up gig pretty much since we started. So I did my last show, which was called Monsieur Butterfly. It was a very elaborate show. You know, Mousetrap, the game Mousetrap.
Yeah.
I sort of built a big one of them.
Amazing.
An hour. It's a lot of fun. So that ended when this started, and I haven't really done anything since. But I have got the horn section, which really keeps me going.
Yeah.
So that I do that as a live thing once yeah. a week, maybe. And I'm thinking, that's fine.
Yeah,
quite
that's
like
plenty,
it.
Isn't it?
In a way, I rely so much on the band I love because they're my oldest friends
yeah.
from primary school. And this I love because it's a little team
yeah.
and they've got the five brilliant comics. So I very rarely have to rely on my own wits.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
always just using other people to stand on their shoulders. And that's fine. So going back by myself isn't very appealing.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's a perfect combination there, really, right? You've got to have the fun part of coming up with something creative,
mm.
and someone else has to have the part of making that funny.
I just come up with a setup.
So it's like you're coming up
yeah.
with the title of the Fringe show,
yeah.
and then handing it off to someone else
I did a bit
to make a funny Fringe show from
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I did a bit. Well, I used to say in the horn section, I've got some new stuff, I haven't finished writing it,
yeah.
and I'll just read out the setup to some jokes, like this elephant, he walked into a swimming changing room.
Yeah,
that's all I've written on that one so far.
That's all you've got. You've yeah, got yeah. the beginning point.
Let the other comics, let the big boys write
you could
the
just
joke.
Pass that on.
That's pretty much my career. Yeah,
and it's a demanding one though, because it's a show that Dave. I mean, people for a long time laughed at Dave for the amount of reruns and how they're all about reruns.
Mm.
When they find something they like it,
yeah.
Because they've pretty much had you going from series to series to series.
Yeah.
It's not a once-a-year thing.
I mean, they do want people to laugh at them, Dave,
yeah.
but they were laughing the wrong way, weren't
yeah,
they? But,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. Not laughing with them, laughing
yeah.
at them, which no one likes.
I mean, it's that thing of... Some people do say, oh, but you wish you were on BBC One or something. Whereas actually, Dave, it's not a small pond, but it is that big fish in a small pond type thing, where they really get behind us and they let us do whatever we want. There's no meddling, but they chuck loads of money on the advertising. So, yeah, I think it's better being a culty thing than a mainstream thing always.
Yeah.
Because in comedy anyway, because you get to do whatever you want and the people will find you if they like it.
Yeah, completely. And again, I think the more seasons you do, the more room you have for the acceptance that it's the concept and the show that works, rather than having to force these big names in. So there'll always be... do you know what I mean? I feel early on you'd probably have, well, we need to have X amount of huge names, whereas you might get more lean way the further you go on. Because like, right, no, it's the format. It's the format.
I don't think people are tuning in to watch Bob, but they would hopefully think, oh, good, Bob's on.
Great. Yeah, exactly.
I'm enjoying seasons. I'm enjoying the, you're saying seasons all the time, not series, just to say, you know.
Seasons is the appropriate, I think.
Like winter.
Very much like winter. But also, and this is to prove that I'm a professional broadcaster, also the American terminology. And there's, I read on Wikipedia, so it's not a secret. I don't know if it's something that's happening now, but there's going to be an American
version. Oh, I added that to Wikipedia. That's not true.
Is that not true?
No, that is true. That is true. I think that's out there.
Yeah, and you're going to be the assistant as such on that still.
My natural role.
Greg's called the Taskmaster. Have you got a specific title?
No, it varies. So I used to be the Taskmaster's assistant, then I got demoted to the Taskmaster's secretary.
Right, okay.
And then I became his masseur for a couple of weeks.
Great.
So it varies, you know, depending on Greg's whim, what he wants me to do.
But does that appeal, the Americanizing it? And what?
I'm very happy with... Well, so we've filmed a lot of that already.
Yeah.
And so Greg has become Reg. It's a similar name, so Greg to Reggie.
Yep.
It's almost the same letters, just with an extra IE. So it's Reggie Watts is my new
He's
boss.
He's great.
So I've got two bosses now.
Yeah.
And it's a different sort of boss.
Yeah.
Equally sort of grand. They're both men that you are impressed by, I think.
Yeah.
But he is gentler than Greg.
Yeah.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
Although Greg's touch is lovely.
I mean, he's a big man. But a tender man, from what I can tell.
That's what I'm trying to spread, this word, that he is very kind to me.
Yeah.
But Reggie's different. And I think the slight different role in America is that because I'm the one who knows the show, I sort of can run it slightly more from my little seat, which is quite nice.
So
I look slightly more like I know what I'm doing. But no, essentially it's exactly the same
thing. Has there been any announcement on who the contestants are?
No, I can't even...
You can't even discuss it.
I can't even tell myself.
The mind boggled, because I think the comedy, the stand-up scene in America is fantastic at the moment, but also knowing American TV, I thought they're definitely going to try and put someone off Storage Wars on there. and the idea of this mixture,
you'd have thought so, wouldn't
you? Yeah. America is, it feels like more of the place where in the UK they go, it'll be all comedians, and in America they go, well, we need some celebrities as well as comedians. So
well, you'll be interested to see
as the comedy roasts often are. They're kind of there's these people like Anthony Jeselnik and Tony Hinchcliffe who are masters at craft and comedy, and then there'll be Snoop Dogg who's there for name recognition only and some good writing for him. So
you, I mean,
it's intriguing.
They asked. I think I just about is. Susan Sarandon nearly agreed to do it.
Oh, wow.
That's the sort of... Not that... Imagine. I mean, that was a massive difference to the people. Yeah, that's... They're not Hollywood A-listers.
Yeah.
But just the fact they approached them made me laugh so much.
Yeah.
That somebody asked Susan Sarandon to do this show where you have to eat a lot of watermelon as quickly as you can.
I love the idea of it. So let's again, I rewind all the way back.
Oh, I'm so confused. So we went forward for a bit, then we rewound once.
Yeah,
so
no, we rewound once.
We've gone past that point.
We've gone back, because it's weird, because we went to the launch date of Champion of Champions, which is today to everyone listening,
but
a week or two to us.
Mm.
But then we went further forward to the American ones.
Yeah. We don't know when that is. That's
no idea when that is. And we hinted at a future series that we can't talk about anyway. So we're now going all the way. We've gone back to the Fringe and come back again.
Yeah.
So that was a quick trip.
Are you going to reorder this, though, for the listener?
It'll be in chronological order. I'm going to edit it heavily to start at the beginning. But was comedy always your goal and desire? You went to Cambridge, right, and studied... What did you study?
I studied, initially, Latin and German, but thought that's not going to do any good. So I left after a term and returned and studied Latin and Greek. And that's more like it, isn't it?
That's, yeah. There's more comedy in Greek, isn't it?
Well, what I found was I got there and...
Greek tragedies.
A lot of the people studying German had been to Germany on their years off.
Yeah.
And I hadn't, so my German wasn't very good.
Right.
Whereas ancient Greek, there's only a... And I really believe this. There's only a set amount of things you can learn in ancient Greek and Latin, because it's all done.
It's done and not going to develop any further.
No. So you've got a certain amount of texts. That's it. It's all there. So
yeah.
So I enjoyed it.
I mean, also very limited applicability
exactly.
in life. Again, in Germany, you can... I mean, in many ways, it's hard to be tested on casually.
Mm.
To Germany and Germans are like, that's not how you speak.
Yeah.
Whereas you're not going to get...
Well, ancient Greek, there's lots of arguments about how people pronounce things. So there's a letter,
Right.
Well, we think it's
pronounced, written.
It's written like an H without the tall bit.
Right.
So like an N.
It's like an N.
Between an N and an H.
Right, okay.
But we think it's pronounced air.
As if a child has written an N.
Yeah, not a
great
child.
Because they often just... Yeah.
Average. Just below average child.
Yeah.
But we think it's pronounced air because when the Greeks wrote down the noise of a sheep, they did the beta first, then that letter. So we think, oh, it's probably pronounced air because sheep say bear.
Yeah.
But then we say sheep say bar, so it's... You know,
yeah.
Who knows? I enjoyed that bit of the podcast.
Yeah, that's a
that's what the listener might say.
Yeah, that's going to be. I've learnt something there. I've learnt something theoretically, not something that's confirmed.
No,
I've learnt an idea of something there.
I may have learnt something.
So, what was the route from learning ancient languages into comedy? You joined the Footlights, right? Which is the legendary.
Yeah. I think I used to be very embarrassed about this. I used to be very embarrassed even saying I went to Cambridge and especially Footlights, because trying to break into comedy, there was rightly a feeling that you had a step up if you went to Cambridge, and it's unfair and it's elitist. And I think there definitely used to be a bit of that, and there might still be that now, I don't know. But equally, a lot of really good people with good comic brains went to Cambridge because they were attracted by Footlights. And Footlights is brilliant. It's just a comedy club. I went there and... They had open mic nights, three times a term, where you go and you can do 5 minutes of stand-up. And it was just stand-up.
Fantastic.
You know, there weren't any boater hats. It wasn't about punting.
Yeah.
It's just normal people. And quite a tough audience, actually, because they're clever people who think they're better than everyone else. So so they're not easy to impress.
Yeah. And it's doing a work-in-progress show at somewhere where the standard is going to be, they're going to be expecting you to be...
Yeah, in front of your mates as well, which is the worst situation.
Yeah.
But it took me 2 years. So I went to Cambridge thinking I was interested in comedy. I liked Peter Cook and Dudley Moore.
Yeah.
I liked Monty Python.
Yeah.
I liked Ardal O'Hanlon.
Yeah.
And that was it. Those were my three influences. but I didn't think I'm going to be a comedian, but I did think I want to try once.
Yeah.
And it took 2 years of going, walking past the audition room and not going in.
Oh, really?
Just horrible. Just so nervous. I don't know about you and your first time on stage, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's odd that... I realised this recently, that my first... Not that I'll go into my story, because I've told it a load of times, but I was working in a record store and I quit my job to try and do music full-time for a year. And it was only recently I realised that when I quit my job, I hadn't thought about this, I'd never performed before.
Wow, that's brave.
But I'd written all my stuff, and I've got really good at it at home, and I'd recorded a little album... And then I quit and went and did my first street gigs. And again, exactly that. I remember the first one. We'd driven there. And I get attributed bravery a lot. But I think I just don't think things through properly sometimes.
Yeah, maybe it's brave or stupid, isn't it?
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is brave. But not conscious bravery, I suppose. It's not self-belief.
I'll just assume that this is going to be great. And I remember exactly that I got to this first gig. And because I'd gone there with my mate and we were going to do this gig, I was going to do it outside of... a DJ Shadow album launch, and we're gone, that's the perfect place to go and do it. And I got there, and literally my mate was like, well, go on then. And that's when it hit me that I actually had to do this. I hadn't thought through that it was me. I thought, well, that'd be a good place to do that, this, and I was like, yep, okay, let's give that a go.
But exciting though, isn't it?
Once it got going, completely. So when you finally stepped in that door,
I think
was it?
Not quite the same as you, but I did think I'd probably be all right at this, because you learn to be funny.
Yeah.
Growing up, you know,
sure.
I made my family laugh when we were playing games at Christmas, you know, that sort of thing. We were playing balderdash, and I think that's when I wrote my first jokes.
Yeah.
So I think hopefully I knew I was funny, because it's all about having a sense of humour and, you know, being able to sense what's funny.
Yeah.
But I wasn't exceptional at all, and I was all right, but it was so much fun. So I did that for a bit, and I, entered some competitions in London, which was the way you used to do it back then.
Yeah.
You used to phone up from time out. There were these numbers saying, we're doing an open night. So you phone up and book a gig the next week. So I'd travel down from Cambridge to King's Cross.
Yeah.
Do a gig, come back. And that was quite good. Getting out of the university scene was quite good.
Yeah.
And just, unlike you, I didn't have a job to quit. I think starting as a student, it's bad in comedy because you haven't got anything to talk about yet. But you also don't have a family to feed. So you can do it.
You can learn more comfortably.
Yeah, yeah. And to be honest, I'm lucky that I had a family who I didn't have to... I got jobs, but I could rely on them a little bit to support me. So the people like John Bishop who quit everything to become a stand-up, they're the ones I really admire. You know? People who start late. Or Mickey Flanagan, someone who changed complete direction. People like me, I don't really have an awful lot of respect for.
I've always enjoyed the quote that if you've got something to fall back on, you're more likely to fall back. And I think that reflects both ways as well, because it gives that credit to those who quit everything. But equally, it states the achievement and drive that's needed if you have got things to fall back on, because you've chosen... you've had it more comfortable and could have easily, at any point, walked away from comedy, but didn't, and persisted, and honed your craft.
I suppose so. The trouble is, one of my first jokes... And this sort of demonstrates what the quality of comedian I am or was.
Yeah.
Was that I used to collect crash mats. Right. I don't anymore, but it's always nice to have something to fall back on. So the whole time you were saying that, I was just thinking,
can I get my joke in?
Yeah, get my joke in. And that's the trouble with knowing comedians, because they're always trying to get their jokes in.
Let's get my bit in.
I think it's a lot of accidental stuff, actually, that really, with a career in comedy, that you just... Well, hopefully. I think it shouldn't be planned.
Yeah.
So I did those gigs, got a job. I worked as a journalist for a bit, and I worked on Big Brother. But eventually the amount of gigs I got overtook the amount of work I was getting, so you can eventually leave the job and you just hope that keeps going on that. As long as that keeps going up, then you don't need to get a job to balance it out. But there's no plan, I do remember signing... I was listening to David Ginola this morning on TalkSport, and he was talking about when he first signed a contract to be a professional footballer when he was... I think he was 19, it was quite late.
Yeah.
And he was saying that he didn't... he phoned his dad and said, I've become a professional footballer. And his dad said, how much are they paying? And he said, I forgot to ask. He didn't know.
Yeah.
So in those days, you just become a footballer, whereas now it feels like they know about the money side of it.
Yeah,
definitely. When I signed with an agency, I signed with Bound and Gagged Comedy, who were brilliant, but I didn't... It wasn't about the money. It's not like you get paid anyway for signing, but it wasn't about the money at all. It was just, wow, this guy's going to help me. And
I'm going to get to be... I'm properly in the industry now.
Yeah, I'm going to tell people.
As something you said there made me think of another thing that I like about Taskmaster. So brilliant. As we're coming towards the end... give that extra dig and praise
to it. We'll rewind a bit, won't we, before we end?
We will we'll rewind and then we'll jump all the way forward and reflect upon your retirement. One of the things that only occurred to me when you mentioned it there is the thing that is great about Taskmaster is it's not a show that is giving comedians an opportunity to get their gags in.
Yes.
It's putting them in situations to be naturally funny and naturally amusing. And on all of the panel shows, as much as I love them, you know when... Jimmy Carr is leading them to a point that they've got a bit that's in their stand-up that's about when they were at school and things like that, and these slightly attached to something that's in the news, but really it's a bit from your old stand-up. That isn't possible at all in Taskmaster, really, because it's just do this task. If it's funny, it's funny. If it's not,
if you do a gag, if you do a joke about crash mats, that's coming out. Not making the edit. But I think I agree. I think it's, you know, these are, we sort of forget comedians are funny people.
Yeah.
So they don't need writers and they don't need script editors telling them what to do.
And they can forget at times, I think, as well. I think a comedian's, again, when it becomes your job, will become so... The pressure of coming up with what is your new show or whatever else, when half the time, if someone else came along and said, your new show is about this, then that pressure would be off and you could just go and get on with being funny. You've got the subject, just you can get
which
on
I guess
with
is
being
that,
funny.
The whole comedy without a safety net. The what's that gig called? The gig where you get given a set list.
So
I think relying on comedians actually being funny and working on their instincts. And hopefully that's what this is. Yeah, we do tell people don't make jokes old. I mean, you can make jokes if you want.
Yeah.
I think Frank, you know, that first series they didn't know what the show was, and Frank would do a joke because he's got more jokes than anyone else.
Yeah, he's a good...
They'd open up the task and go and do a joke about paper first of all, and then do the task. But he realised after two tasks that that's not necessary. You know, you can be funny rather than say funny. But it's a difference, I think.
I love that. Well, I mean, as we're coming towards the end, I'll let you get back to Taskmaster assistant in.
Mm-hmm. People need assistance.
But I want to talk a little bit about the horn section how that came about and what drew you towards doing a musical thing, right, other than the horn section being a good name
and your name being Alex Horn. No, it's definitely a bit of both. I'd say it's similar to Taskmaster, and I was it was the same time, the same year, I think, that they came up with it. So I'd had my son, my first child. Mm-hmm. And I think that does make you slightly desperate, or it makes you think about things a bit more, because you think, I need to support.
The pressure
something.
Is on, particularly if you've grown up, as you were saying, in a situation where you had family support and stuff like that. So you'd never, even before a child, you'd never had particular pressure.
Yeah,
to look after yourself. Like, you're obviously looking after yourself, but there's, do you know what I mean? There's always felt that safe net. Whereas when there's a child,
they do rely on a lot of pressure. Yeah. And also you have less time when you have a child, which I think makes you create more, because you think, I've only got 2 hours today. Let's cram something in rather than this day stretching ahead of you. So I'd done a gig at Ronnie Scott. So my two best friends from primary school became jazz musicians, and I became a comedian. Okay. And we always hung out. I went to some jazz gigs and clapped at, the right times. I was pretty good at it.
Perfect.
And they came to comedy gigs and laughed at the right times. So I think I had a sense
of... when you take a swig of water, right?
Exactly. That's that. When the comedian stops talking and steps back sometimes, that's when he claps.
That's the clap. I get it.
So we'd always hung out. And then the saxophonist, Mark, did these regular gigs at Ronnie Scott's called Soul Family, which is a brilliant night once a month. And I did a spot on it. And it went really well. I just did a comedy thing but with a jazz audience, and the band was there, and I got them to do bits and bobs.
Amazing.
And we thought, this is interesting. And so we booked a night up at Edinburgh, with 6 nights at midnight in a small room. And I got all my comedian friends to do spots at it. And people were very... Tim was there, obviously. And people were very supportive. So Jimmy Carr was amazing. He did it for free lots and lots of times. And Tim Minchin came. And so that's how it started. So it was comedians doing stuff with a band playing along without rehearsals, you know. Tim Minchin would say, "Can I give me some sad music?" And they would just play some sad music, and suddenly any story would be elevated.
Yeah.
And then gradually over the years, that's become, we're relying less and less on the comics, and just we tend to have one guest occasionally, but mainly it's us now, because we've done it for 8 years.
Yeah.
So it's comedy and music, and it's me. I don't know anything about music, and they don't know anything about comedy, but I do a bit, and they do a bit. So it's sort of meeting in the middle.
Yeah, I like that. I need to now just briefly address that I was asked to come and do it. When I was up at the Fringe, and I said no, but because most of my stuff is like poems about suicide and stuff like that, which no matter what kind of musical accompaniment, it might ruin the night slightly.
We've got a new song about grief, where we sing the writing's really good, quite seriously about what grief is.
Yeah, I mean, you've never been sad, so
this is from Will, the bassist, who's only been sad.
Regularly sad, that's basic.
But the music is really upbeat.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the joke. It's not really a joke. Actually, no audience has done how to deal with this song.
I always had that at the Fringe. I'd get invited to do tons of the late night things. It's like, I'm not the right...
Yeah.
It was my first year up there as well, so I was always like, I think they're just assuming I'm going to be able to come and be funny and entertaining, and then I'm going to get up for quite drunk, angry Scottish people and go, ever considered hurting yourself?
I think saying no was... At the time, saying no was probably the right thing. However, and this is going to sound crass... we're just doing our own podcast. We did Radio 4 for quite a while, which is great.
Yeah.
And they haven't asked us back for a while, which is fine too. But that's a safe place where you have to show your scripts to producers and they have to say, that's fine.
Yeah.
Whereas podcasts, I guess this is why you do it. You do whatever you want.
It's what I love about it. I've been approached a few times by BBC stations and all sorts of other things since the podcast has got successful. And it doesn't appeal. Mm. The appeal is doing it yourself, of being able to email 2 days ago and say, let's do it. And coming and sitting in the caravan and doing it now.
Well, I'll email you 2 days before our next podcast, because if you plan to coming and talking about suicide,
100%.
It's a safe place.
I'd love to. That'd be great.
You'd be cross-pollinization.
What is the kind of theme of your podcast, and what's the tone of it? Is there music?
It's
constantly.
It's so stupid. It's mainly stuff that you wouldn't be able to do. There's no audience, so that frees us up quite a bit, because you don't need to get a laugh every 20 seconds. So it's me and the band. The band plays songs that they've written that we wouldn't do live.
Yeah,
because they're too obscure. They're about Jacques Villeneuve, or they're not for the mass audience. And I ask them about their lives in quite personal detail.
Yeah,
and it's just lots of stupid games. And we have an audience of one, which is our special guest. So
amazing.
So David Arnold has been on, who composed all the music for Sherlock and James Bond.
Right. Wow.
So hopefully people from music, but also Tim's done it.
Yeah.
Tim Key.
Yeah.
He's done
it. I'm familiar with him. I love that, though. And it's what I love about the freedom of podcasts is. exactly that. Number one, the freedom to do what you want. Number two, there's a weird disposable feel to them, which I think is really freeing. There's not that pressure of the fact is, if you have an episode that doesn't connect, there'll be another one next week. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's that constant turnover thing, which can get some of the most real content out, because you're not spending ages going, this has to be perfect and polished and lovely. You're just allowing it to happen.
Well, when we do a song in the podcast and it goes wrong, we might play it again, but we'll play both versions out.
Yeah.
Because I think it's funnier and more interesting to hear, but when wrong, that's fine, I think.
Yeah.
We wanted it to be the listeners sitting in with us when we were rehearsing or jamming.
It's the freedom
Can
of
I
it.
Can I pull off jamming?
You absolutely nailed it until you highlighted a lack of confidence in nailing it, and now it sounds quite racist. A blind boy of the Rubber Bandits has started a podcast recently, and it's fantastic because there'll be 10, 15 minutes or half hour at the beginning of him talking about politics or whatever's going on, and he's wonderful at that. And then he's just recorded a short story each episode where he's done a musical accompaniment, and it's the most weird. It feels like a proper kind of BBC Four type production of a real high end storytelling thing. But it's Blind Boy, and it's talking about some weird, random stuff in Limerick.
And if listeners don't like that, they don't have to listen.
If they do, they can... Exactly.
Oh, it's a good system, isn't it?
It's the beauty of it. So, well, thank you very much. I'll let you go as we approach the hour mark. Is there anything else that you need to plug or tell people about?
No,
obviously, the show starts tonight as this goes out, so that's wonderful.
No. I think people don't need to be... I think if people were interested in me, they'd... They can Google and
whereas find
stuff.
I think
if I plug stuff, there's a chance those people who thought they might be interested would then think, he's that guy.
Are you doing any Christmas stuff? I feel
we're
the
doing
whole
a Christmas show at the
really
Leicester Square Theatre
pushes itself towards
Spiegel
Christmas
on December the 7th.
Perfect.
It will have happened a week ago.
That will have already been on. Yeah. But I mean, again, I told you that we would jump into the future and look back.
Anyway,
so
what
a gig that was! The Spiegel Tent was perfect for it. It was such a lovely.
Oh, it was a great gig. Oh. Empty though. We did a
No one's.
We did a Christmas film for Sky Shorts last year, which no one's watched. So that's on YouTube.
Great.
Do have a look at it. It's one of the things I'm proudest of. It's a 7-minute horn section comedy skit.
Well, we'll put a link to that in this
podcast.
I think
it's nice, but no one's seen it, so do watch that.
Do you think there's a reason no one's seen it? Is it as good as
a lot of people started watching it, and then they drip away after.
Right, that doesn't sound great.
No, it's not for everyone.
It's worth persisting, I guess.
Just stick it on, and you can always walk away from it, leave it playing, then we get the stats.
That's perfect. Well, thank you very much for coming on and chatting. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Me too. Thank you, Scroobius.
You've been listening to Scroobius Picks Discretion Pieces.
There we go, that was Alex Horn. It was genuinely exciting and slightly distracting to be in the Taskmaster caravan, because I adore the show. After we did that, I went and had a look around the house and got to go in the big living room and in the lab type area and have a bit of a look around the garden. It was hugely exciting. And I know I'm a fanboy for this, but if you've not caught Taskmaster before, I recommend checking it out. It's my go-to. Like, I have it on series link, and when I'm away, it's the first one that I jump on catching up on, because the lineups are always great, the tasks great. But I've said all of this in the podcast, so let's calm ourselves down. And next week, Alex has been our last guest of the year, because from next week, we're in drunk chaos country. So it'll be drunk cast until the new year. We're going to record it. I think we're only recording it 2 days before it goes out. So we're going to record it. It's going to be me, Chris and Stu, the original drunk cast companions. And we're going to have Dr. Susie Gage of Say Why to Drugs there to get drunk and do cognitive tests. And hopefully she's bringing a breathalyzer. Jason Reed of the Stop and Search podcast. He'll be there to give some insights. Jim Smallman of Tuesday Night Jaw, who, as he's straight-edged, he will be having British wrestling legend and winner of Tournament of Death 2017, Jimmy Havoc, there to drink on his behalf. So it's going to be amazing. And we're going to have John who looks after a lot of the social media there as well, to kind of Google stuff and look stuff up and generally be a dude. So it's going to be really good fun. I don't know how many we're going to do, but they'll be going out over the Christmas period for you guys. So yeah, thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you all next week. Ta-ta.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.